Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
We'd like to welcome Ginger Dixon to the podcast today. Ginger, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. Bit under weather, but getting over it. It is, unfortunately, yes. Just wanted to get us started, Ginger, and helping people understand your background and how you came across your journey. Can you give us a sense of some of your academic path and what made you choose some of the areas and subject areas that you focused on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my journey in healthcare and public health as a vocational nurse. Next year is actually my 10-year nursing anniversary, so I'm excited for that. And then I got into nursing because when my first kiddo was born, they were really sick in the hospital for a while, and I saw the work that, you know, the nurses and the providers were doing there, and that kind of got me into it. And then I moved into biology for my undergraduate, and I always loved science and animals, and thought of going into research and education. And I think with my biology education, the things that I loved doing the most was the ecology and microbiology. And then towards the end of my program, I took some courses in epidemiology and global health, and I loved it and decided to, you know, kind of apply that nursing biology background and go into biostatistics and epidemiology. When I went to graduate school, I had actually started off in biostatistics and realized that the theoretical math is not my forte. And so I went over to the more of an epidemiology focus, which is still very biostatistics heavy, and did my master's in epidemiology. During that program, my research was using wavelet analysis to evaluate trends and compare a mosquito model to real world data that a local health department had collected on their mosquito populations. So basically what we were doing was we were making sure it was okay to use the model as a substitute in a rural area that had, you know, limited surveillance, and some of the numbers that we had, we weren't sure how reliable they might be. And we were trying to establish what factors led to the change in mosquito season. And with that increased risk of, you know, the mosquito-borne diseases like West Nile virus, so that we could use that and predict in the future, you know, when as changing climates occurring and patterns with mosquitoes might change, we wanted to get a better idea of what predictors we need to look at so that we can put out that messaging to protect people in the area. I really enjoyed it. Wavelet analysis is a really interesting tool. Again, it's very, very theoretical, and I'm more of an application type of person. But it was really engaging. I enjoyed it. And then right now I'm working on a doctorate in public health. And the concentration there is in population analytics and decision making. And I've been really, really happy with that choice, because the program that I'm in, it's with Stanford University. And it's a really nice balance of looking at, you know, very data-driven methods and practical application, and then also the leadership portion. And it's a very service-oriented program. So I really like that. And then I've been doing the data science program with Correlation One. I know we had kind of touched on that. They have a program called Data Science for All. And it's a wonderful program, the way that it's set up. So it's free to those who are accepted, and it's a very rigorous application process. So they focus on getting underrepresented populations into data science, so that they can bring in their, you know, their unique perspectives and their insight. And once you're in, they offer career counseling and professional development. They work with different companies to provide, you know, job opportunities for the students in the program. And then one of the really cool things is that you work with a team on a capstone project. And so for our project, we're working on doing predictive modeling and machine learning on mosquito populations, climate, and West Nile virus, partially because it's a short program and I knew where to get that data. And we want to see and model, you know, how things change over time. You know, if we go up X number of degrees, what does that look like for our mosquito populations or West Nile disease? And it's really nice. It's very hands-on with the coding and programming and learning that process of being a data scientist. And then some project management in there. Knows you're working closely with the team to produce this product in a very short amount of time.
Sure. So Ginger, can we just go back a little bit and explore some of the areas that you studied in them? After each of those educational opportunities, was there some type of work placement, or did you have a period where you were on the professional track before going back to your next set of studies, or was it one path of studies followed the next immediately?
Well, so with nursing, I went into nursing, and then a couple of times I tried to go back and do the registered nursing program while I was still working, and it's really challenging with the clinical schedule. Being at the hospital at 6 a.m. with kiddos and trying to coordinate everything is difficult. And with, I think with, I continued to use nursing, you know, and work as a nurse throughout the earlier part of my education until I got through my graduate program, actually, in epidemiology. And then with, I guess, in the middle of me going through the epidemiology program is when we had the COVID-19 pandemic hit, which I guess I came into public health at a really good time and began working with a local health department as a contractor consultant and helping them with their COVID-19 mitigation efforts and surveillance and investigations and data cleaning, things like that. And I think it was a pretty straight shot, but with some breaks in there. So, sure. You know, along the way, I went through a lot of struggles. You know, I started off my higher education as a teenage mother, and I had no idea that I would end up here, you know, what's it been? 10, 14 years. And it was really tough sometimes kind of balancing caring for and supporting my family with school. And then I've probably been in school for about 10 plus years at this point. And then along the way, went through two very unhealthy, you know, abusive relationships. We had a lot of support from various people along the way, but and a lot of them came into our lives at just the right time and people that we wouldn't have expected to be there for us and help us. But it's definitely possible to, you know, work through all those hardships and go as a professional, but it definitely was, it was definitely difficult. And at times I had to strike a really hard balance between, you know, family and professional growth and surviving that type of thing.
I was just going to comment how it's certainly not the ideal scenario to be going through your academic or professional careers. And so kudos to you to getting to the stage despite those scenarios and despite those issues that you had to face, unfortunately. Thank you. So Ginger, help us explore something then. Clearly there's a connection between yourself and mosquitoes. Did you grow up up north where we have where we despise mosquitoes for a few months of the year? Are you from the Southwest? What exactly caused your interest in mosquitoes?
That's funny, actually. So I've grown up mainly in southern regions. And so especially, you know, in Texas where it's nice and humid, mosquitoes are almost year round. But, you know, really the interest in modeling came before the mosquitoes. So when I was going through the EPI program, I came in with a really big interest in infectious disease modeling and kind of the information and the what we can do with it. And so I sought out an advisor who had that sort of background in the infectious disease modeling, and she was working with mosquitoes. And there was a project that had come up during that time working with state and local health departments. And it's part of the BRACE measure that was put out by the CDC. And I want to say it's building resistance against climate. I don't want to say it's climate change, but there's an E in there. So it was really serendipitous that she had that project available and needed help with it, and that it was a focus that, you know, that I was wanting to work on with the modeling. And so that's kind of where how the mosquitoes came about. And then, you know, as I learned more about mosquito-borne, vector-borne diseases, I think it's a really interesting dynamic of how you have not only the disease spread, but you also have to look closely at what's going on with the organism. You know, if you have, whether that's mosquitoes or animals, what's going on with those populations and their ecology and their ecosystems are also very important to what's going on with the disease. And I always loved, like I said, the ecology and biology part. And so it was really rewarding for me to get to integrate that in with the infectious disease part and correlate, you know, that whole health and ecology background together.
That's definitely interesting. And certainly in the aspects of being able to focus on both population health, ironically, when you're mentioning the South, just to be clear, it's Southern US, not necessarily kind of global South, as we'd call it.
Yes.
but I think the other aspect is that certainly, you know, you mentioned West Nile and recently we had a chance to speak to some people for neglected tropical diseases. And there's a lot of overlaps here in these spaces. But so naturally, looking at it from a modeling perspective, have you had a chance to work with other disciplines? Were you looking at it mostly from a perspective of we have data, let's develop a model from the data? Or were you working with some professionals in other aspects of the fields, whether it be microbiologists or other areas that were, or entomologists in this case, that were studying the patterns of the mosquitoes or the results of what happens from the mosquito bite?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I would say I haven't had that opportunity yet. When I had come into that project, it was, you know, the mosquito model had been developed, and I was kind of, as a thesis project, you're focusing on one very, you know, small specific piece of the puzzle. But that's definitely part of the larger piece that I do want to work in, especially. We had touched on this a little bit, but I've recently expanded or specialized into One Health by opening up One Life Epi Solutions. And that's something that we're looking to do with that company, is work with, you know, people who are working on different aspects of the puzzle and integrate in all of those pieces.
And so, can you talk to us about what One Health Epi Solutions is intended to do on a longer term basis, Ginger?
Yeah. So what, and it's
And I should add here, this is not some kind of paid plug. So please,
oh, no.
please describe it as you see it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I'm just excited. So we, with One Life Epi Solutions, it's about looking at using data and education to address, you know, those One Health factors like degradation of environmental ecosystems and climate health and our interactions with wildlife And then also that, you know, that resulting spread of infectious disease from animals and insects to humans. And so what we are doing is working with organizations on solving, you know, those root causes. And I think one of the big things that I hope to achieve with that organization is, you know, promoting organization and community engagement, and then helping people who are working in those areas to, I guess, to do more, you know, to meet their goals and their mission, because there's a lot of people out there doing some amazing work. You know, I'm hoping to continue to support them. And then it's very, you know, One Health is a very much an ecosystems approach. And some people are looking at it, you know, on a small scale, and some people are looking at the big picture, and both are very important. But I get really excited when we talk about using, you know, surveillance data and combining it with other information that we can pull in, like climate or wildlife, disease trends. And that way we can get a really good picture of what's going on with those ecosystems on a global scale. And then, you know, use those to provide those targeted evidence-based solutions. And that way we're really packing a punch, you know, when people are going in with these interventions trying to solve the problems.
Sure. And so Ginger, is part of the next steps for you to essentially take some of the technical and modeling capabilities that you have and make them available to people who are, we'll call it, sort of on the ground looking at the situation from a public health perspective?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so from a perspective of the data science that you're bringing to the table and the approach you're trying to bring, which sounds to me a little bit like capacity development as much as you're offering capacity to help them in certain areas, you're also interested in kind of sharing some education with others, I believe.
Yeah. From my background, I'm a huge proponent of education and one of those, you know, lifelong learners. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot of needs that we have, you know, in One Health focus areas, from, you know, working with our surveillance and even just awareness of what One Health is and what those principles involve. That's huge, because it's gaining more awareness and more traction, but I think that there's still a lot more groundwork that we can lay there so that everyone understands it at the big picture level. And then, like we talked about too, you know, what that means in people's daily lives. And then there's a lot that, you know, individual businesses and organizations can do. There's a lot that we can learn about how to interact with wildlife in healthy ways, how to be smart about our land development, you know, and working on that huge component of climate health. And then we have one of the things that, actually, there's this great paper, and it's Pathogeography. It's by Murray et al. And I could spend an entire podcast just talking about the paper, but it's kind of what really moved me into the One Health piece when I was looking at, you know, what I want to focus on in my editorial work. And some of the things that they talked about is how there's a huge need for disease mapping for more of these animal and insect species, especially those that are kind of, you know, the weedy invasive host species. They tend to have a higher risk for transmitting disease. And then looking at some of those pathogens out there that aren't as well studied, you know, so we know that we've only identified a very few human pathogens out of the huge amount of viruses that are out there and existing in wildlife, and that could potentially be zoonotic, you know, or spread to humans. And so that's also a huge piece that I think that if we can maybe make people more aware, you know, there are the diseases that we've learned about and focused on are very important. But also make people more aware of those other needs out there so that we can get more people working on those as well. And then hopefully attract more funding for those people to work on those.
Ginger, can you help us understand as well? Like, so if we look at the data science aspect of this, mm-hmm. the technical level that's required and technical level of proficiency required. Nowadays, there's a lot more sort of plug and play features and plug and play modules. You can grab AI capabilities, TensorFlow, and other capabilities you can leverage without necessarily having to do the base coding for every single aspect of your pathway and your pipeline, right? So can you give us a sense of, for somebody who's coming at this from the biological angle, or someone's coming at this, in our case, from the lab angle, what's the transition like to get into the data science field? And what's the transition like to make those, to make that leap and say, okay, now I can proficiently come around and, you know, maybe not be a world expert necessarily in modeling, but have a good handle of what's needed and what can be done?
So with, to kind of move into that, I think one of the things that helps is at least understanding, you know, what we're looking at with statistics, you know, and kind of what those basic tenets are of, you know, if we're looking at a plot, you know, if we're looking at data, what's kind of grouping together, you know, what different trends might we be looking for, where could some of those basic problems with what we're looking at be, where we know kind of what we need to clean, and maybe some different ways of looking at the data. I think that's helpful, but it's certainly not, you know, you certainly don't need like 3 semesters of biostatistics to get a good handle and really, you know, look at what data is telling you. And I really, so, you know, with the epidemiology training, we went through a lot of those, you know, descriptive statistics and looking at associations and different models. And one of the things that's been really interesting that I've been learning in the Correlation One program is some of the different tools and model options in Python. And there are definitely people out there that are better at coding in Python than me, but it's enough that, you know, I can come in and use a package like Pandas, you know, and be able to apply some really cool statistics and models to data without having to understand those really complex, you know, the really complex theory and stuff like that. And so I think that for someone who is coming in, kind of getting that, just that background overview, you know, in how we look at data and how to think like a data scientist. And then kind of playing around a little bit, because there's Python is not the only program out there that you can use for data science. I've used Stata and SAS and MATLAB. A lot of people in the science disciplines like to use R. And there are a ton of free learning resources out there. And Correlation One is an excellent comprehensive program, but there's also things like DataQuest, Medium, and Data Independent also have some great resources, and very step-by-step simplistic to get you through the coding part. But there's a lot of great resources out there to learn that platform and then be able to easily apply some of those techniques without having to go through all the theory complexities.
So Ginger, that's great to hear. And I guess one of the questions I had, I forgot to ask this earlier, but on Data Science for All, is that available to a global audience? Is that a US specific audience? Are you familiar with their sort of criteria?
Yeah. So they have 3 different programs that I'm aware of. I know that they do work. They have a program that's for Latin America. I believe that they have some other global programs going on as well. And then they have 2 others that are, there's a Data Science for All Empowerment and then a Data Science for All Women programs. And so each has their own eligibility criteria. And I know that it's been a very quickly expanding program. And so I imagine that there are plans to continue to expand that availability for people.
Sure. And the benefit of those listening will be able to include some links to all these programs that they can follow up with if they are interested in exploring this further. So Ginger, I appreciate your focused and your capabilities that you're bringing to the table are obviously sort of well-rounded in themselves. At the same time, a lot of your program and the capabilities associated to your program rely on data. Can we speak a little bit? You had mentioned the idea of data cleansing before. Could you speak a little bit about the types of data problems people encounter when trying to run some of these models and trying to create some of these predictive models? Just at a high level, we don't need to go into super detail.
Yeah, so you're talking about when you're preparing your data and you're cleaning it to look at what you have, or
correct? Yeah, I'm thinking from the perspective of a lot of people listening to this will be in environments where the data is captured and actually have a direct role in either capturing the data or working with a team of people who are capturing the data. And oftentimes it's sort of the garbage in, garbage out approach, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Just curious, any suggestions or thoughts you have towards that?
Yeah. That's a great question. So in the data collection process, some of the challenges that are out there is, again, you know, resources. Everybody's trying to do a lot with a little bit, and you trying to get consistent data is one of the most helpful things, especially when you're trying to look at, you know, associations and trends. And so from my perspective, when I'm looking at data, I would rather focus on a couple of areas and then have really consistent long-term data from those areas so that I can see, you know, what's going on. And then when there are, you know, those outliers where something funky happened, it's really helpful to have those notes from the people who are collecting the data on, you know, such and such day or such and such data point, this may have been an issue. And then that way, when you are going through your data and analyzing and trying to see, well what happened here? Then that really helps to put, you know, again, the pieces of the puzzle together. And then one of the other things, and it's one of those things that seems like a small issue, but it can be problematic, is that sometimes, you know, there's no data to collect for that day. Say like with the mosquito numbers, right? That say there were no mosquitoes found. It's always better to have to make it really clear that there's nothing there because there's no data. You know, we put in a zero instead of something being missing, because then it's not clear, did we just accidentally miss that day or did something happen? Because one of the things that you do when you're cleaning is you look at, you know, what data is missing, and does that missing data have an association with what we're trying to look at as far as, you know, what factors and outcomes we're interested in? Because if, say, the missing data is associated with a certain outcome, then that kind of messes up, you know, our analysis and what we can really gather from the story that the data is telling. So those are a couple of things. I think just the consistency and details is really helpful. And then when you're cleaning and analyzing, being really creative and using that critical thinking of, you know, what are different ways that we can look at this and what different factors can we look at together and how might this piece influence this piece? Those are some of the things that I think is the most fun part of working with data, but it's also one of the most critical when you're trying to learn from it.
Sure. So Ginger, just where we stand right now, I'd like to offer the same opportunity we do to all our guests, to invite them to say thank you to anybody who's been a mentor or support in the past, as they've gone through their journey. So I'd like to do that for yourself. Anybody in particular you'd like to name or mention?
Thank you. Yeah, I was thinking this through. There's a lot of people that would love to thank by name, but I've had amazing professors in my nursing and biology and public health journey who supported me, you know, through my education and then emotionally as well and professionally. And so I'd like to thank them as a group. And then my advisors, Dr. Jason Willand and Dr. Heidi Brown, in my bachelor's, my master's programs were wonderful. And then they said that correlation one program, I'm just very thankful that they're doing what they're doing and that they've offered me that opportunity. And then I've also been working with a public health entrepreneur coach, Dr. Charlotte Huntley, who's really helped me to grow and see, you know, how I can do more in that One Health realm. And then of course, my good friends and my amazing family who have been there for me and given me more love and more support than I could have ever asked for. Pretty blessed.
With that, Ginger, I want to thank you for time today. It's really interesting learning about your story and again, congratulations for what you've gone, not that what you've gone through, but for getting through what you've gone through and still doing what you've done. I'll say it that way. It certainly has not been easy, but I think something that unfortunately will resonate with a few people as well as situations that they can get through. So I appreciate you telling that story and being open with it as well. And I certainly think a lot of interesting potential resources we can share with the audience, which I'll gather from you and we can add as a part of the episode description. I think it'd be great to share some of those links with them and have them have access to some of these opportunities. And I know with the work that you're trying to put together, I'm sure they'll come across some of your training options in the future as well. So kudos to you on that line of thinking as well.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for giving the opportunity to come on and talk with you and spread a little hope and inspiration. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing too, Robert.
Thank you, Ginger. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.